It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 28th day of October, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. That's also where we keep the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room tucked away for easy access. If you've never been there before, then, or if you're new to the program, that's a great way to augment your live listening experience. And, you know, when the program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Speaking of Pacific Daylight Time, very happy birthday wishes going out to Billable Rick and the lovely Star. Yes, indeed, Billable Rick and his dear one share a birthday, and they're sharing it today. So happy birthday to them. I'm sitting here all ready to go, having just peeled open my C's butterscotch lollipop. Still getting a little help over the hump as far as not smoking is concerned. And that helps through the course of a program. Right now, I'll probably be hiccuping like a madman here in about 2 minutes because I had my pre-show nicotine pouch. Oh, all these little rituals. Like I said, it is the 28th day of October, 2020, and if you do head over to the chat room, then by Jove, you will be immediately greeted by early arrivers, Alien Jimmy, Anatole, Oregon Larry, Ralps, Roger in Oregon, Squeaky, Stockton Larry, we have a fraternity of Larry, you know, and you will be capably moderated by longtime, entirely veteran, non-veteran chat room moderator, me, because, well, you know, Sparky takes the day off, and I have a feeling that all-around a pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, has probably been delayed by, being buried in work. It happens to Steve. It happens to great guys. But here we are at midweek, prayer meeting Wednesday. Oh, my God. But every prayer meeting and every other program here on the Horn is, well, it begins with gratitude because you are the ones who keep the program on the air. Many thanks, first of all, to Darlene for her challenge last night. It did get met in the after hours of the program, so that's that takes a great weight off of my mind. And thanks also to an anonymous friend, and thank you to George, and thank you to Barbara, and thank you to Beth in Dallas, all of whom jumped in to make sure that was met, and then a little bit extra on top of it, so that our fundraising goal this evening is only $375. That's awesome. $375 to go to stay even with the week, and that is intensely helpful. And thanks to our subscribers for this 28th day of the month. Thank you to Randy in PA, and thank you to Suman. Thank you to Sharon, and thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you all very kindly indeed for being partial sponsors of the program. So, you know, if we can keep up with things, we got a fighting chance, you know, going into November. As Election Day rolls around, I'm seeing a lot of liberal and progressive broadcast and print and internet outlets sending emails around saying, hey, survival is tough. Because that is one of the downsides of the presidential election season. The billions of dollars that it takes to get people elected to office often sucks all the oxygen out of the room for the people who actually do the job of informing the public. And this year is no different. It is perhaps worse because of the dondemic, the pandonic, the Trump pandemic. By the way, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan didn't get swamped by work today. He's actually on his way back from a doctor's appointment and will be in the chat room shortly. So come on by. It's a great. We're having a great time in there. The conversation is already zipping and zooming by. Let's see. Let's get started with some of the things that start every program. There we go. Kyle with an early message. Oh, and thank you. Thank you very kindly just a second. And yes, Steve in New York pointing out. And no, it's still not about the cat. No, it isn't. It isn't. And yes, to our anonymous friend, your contribution did come in last night around 9 o'clock. Much appreciated. So, note coming in from, oh, I know what I was going to say. Thank you to Jeremy in Vermont for being first past the post to begin the program this evening. That makes it 3:70. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very much for getting us started and for all that you do. Bob! Jackie Robinson, part one. The Dodgers won the World Series last night, and for the first time in years, as an avid baseball fan, and Joey is one, I couldn't have cared less, as I did not watch any of the games. I found, with all that was going on with the pandemic, baseball having a season was rather foul and out of line. That was a desperate plea for a cowbell, is what that was. That was the seventh World Series win for the Dodgers, but following many years of failures as the Yankees tormented them in the early part of the 20th century, the Brooklyn Bums, the Dodgers finally won their first World Series in 1955, led by Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson didn't have a particularly good season in 55, but his leadership, grit, and guile on and off the field were so crucial for the Dodgers of that era, as they finally beat the Yankees after 40 years of frustration behind the great pitching of one Johnny Padre. People wondered why Johnny Padre did not pitch for the Padres. Well, actually, he did in his last year in the majors and the first year of the San Diego Padres franchise in 1969. However, the Padres were very bad their first year, and you could say on this prayer meeting Wednesday, neither Johnny Padre nor any Padre had a prayer that year. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe reflects, how can a padre or a priest not have a prayer? Well, that was an excellent meditation, Giraffe. Slightly more vigorous cowbell. Well, anyways, Dodger Stadium is one of the most beautiful venues on earth to watch a baseball game in lovely Chavez Ravine. And there's a horrifying backstory to its construction, but we'll leave that for another day. I've told those close to me, Joey says, including my parents, my wife, Billable Rick, and Jeffrey the Giraffe, that when I die, I would like my ashes spread over the foothills that surround Dodger Stadium, and believe me, if this asshole wins the White House again, I might just stroke out. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says, Don't forget to have the Horn family wish Billable Rick and the lovely Star a very happy birthday. Yes, Rick and Star share the same birthday today. Indeed. And I have. And we just did again. So, seriously, way happy birthday to Billable Rick and Star. However, in recent years, after talking to people in the neighborhood surrounding Dodger Stadium, Chavez Ravine, I have heard the horror stories. See, I told you we'd get there. From the natives of how Dodger Stadium came into being. Basically, Walter O'Malley, the Dodgers owner, did a real dodgy deal with the politicians in that jurisdiction, and hundreds of people lost their homes. One woman was literally dragged from her house. It was an angry scene. That being said, upon my demise, I hereby officially designate Billable Rick, and he's a good person to designate, being how he's a lawyer and everything, to dispose of my earthly remains, ashes, in the lovely hamlet of Brentwood, California, a village just west of Hollywood and Beverly Hills. Yes, I would like Billable Rick to throw my ashes right onto LeBron's front lawn. That's right, the Akron native now lives in Brentwood, not far from where O.J. used to cut up. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says, cut it out, Joey. The world seriously does not need an O.J. reference. I could not agree with Giraffe more. Jackie Robinson, part two tomorrow. This has been Joey's Journal for prayer meeting Wednesday, the 28th day of October, with Giraffe just praying like a padre for a new president, and that we rid ourselves of dodgy Donald. Yeah, and our buddy John in PA asking me, is this how you guys party down in West Virginia, too, sent me helicopter footage of some over-eager Dodgers fan in East L.A. Like I said, helicopter footage, as terribly happy Dodgers fan did donuts in their car as fireworks were shot off in an area where wildfires are forcing the evacuation of people. Well, I don't think the fireworks caused a wildfire. They did cause, however, a car fire, as the genius doing donuts in a parking lot or wherever the hell it was managed to drive over one of them and catch his own car on fire. Beautiful moments, courtesy of the goddess of irony. And thank you to John and PA for sharing that video with me. Agnes and I saw it this morning, and we had much, much merriment as we watched it. And in answer to the question, but no, we don't do it. We don't celebrate exactly like that here in West Virginia. If the Mountaineers, my beloved West Virginia University Mountaineers, who started off life as the West Virginia Snakes over 100 years ago, if they were to ever win a national championship in college football, and they remained the single most successful college football program out there never to have won a national championship, but if they were, we would not celebrate by setting cars on fire with fireworks while doing donuts in the middle of, say, University Avenue in Morgantown, West Virginia. Some would probably take their great big the diesel filth spewing modified diesel trucks, pickup trucks, up onto a mountaintop removal site and doing donuts there. And, you know, to hell with a bunch of firecrackers. They'd be using dynamite. And then in Morgantown, there would, of course, be the obligatory couch burnings. So hopefully we've got that. We've got that cultural conundrum sorted out, and we're happy to do it here at the Horn. Yes. Jeremy has awarded a cowbell, another one, to Giraffe for where OJ used to cut up. Jeremy noting and earning his own cowbell. Thinking outside with the box cutter on that one. Oh God, you know, we may have to reopen the Cathedral of Common Sense just to get some of y'all inside and get back to work on you. That's bad, Jeremy. That's just bad. Oh, and by the way, there was a glitch. Randy and PA reminding me. There was a glitch early today on the Horn's website. It wasn't on the Horn's website. The glitch was with PayPal itself. And it is all fixed now. But if you had any problems before, they should be squared away. And hopefully we won't have any trouble knocking out the biggest part of that $370 we've got to go this evening. Shorty in L.A. with a note. Repeat these words. Quarantine Amy Coney Barrett ASAP. Just as handmaiden. Excuse me, I got that wrong. Let me start over. Just as a hand made her a Supreme Court justice like Clarence Thomas can take that corona back to the courthouse, she should be quarantined immediately. Being at the White House, especially being around President Trump yesterday, should warrant the health protection of every Supreme Court justice. It also keeps her away from the bench for at least 14 days. Yeah, that would mean that she wouldn't be there, say, November the 10th. It's not quite 14 days. But November the 10th is the argument in which she'll sit in and hear oral arguments on the desperate urge of the Republican Attorneys General Association to destroy health care for tens of millions of American citizens. But I get your point, Shorty. I do. I so do. And, yes, so someone fixed the glitch, as in the movie Office Space? Yes, Steve, the glitch was corrected, my understanding, by the folks at PayPal, or PayPirate, as some of you refer to it. And this from Kyle, the Orange Asshole Campaign, and this was amazing. The Orange Asshole Campaign, leaving their cult followers out in the cold last night in Omaha, having not planned for buses or any other way for them to get out of there, tells you everything you need to know about them. And yet we have to question who's more sick, the orange asshole himself or those who, for whatever reason, continue to follow and worship him? Well, they're the same kind of people. It's wrestling for people who can't handle the complex rules of wrestling. Because I asked the question last night, what is it that keeps people coming back to Donald Trump? And that's what it is. It is wrestling for people who can't comprehend the complex rules of wrestling. Yeah. I know, complex rules of wrestling, right? Sure. Oh, that's true. Stockton Larry reminding us, based on Joey's journal. But Bob, did y'all forget that Orson Bean's son-in-law dropped dead right there in Brentwood, and yes, not so bright bar is still dead, and that's a good thing. Yeah, it's been almost as long as some Soviet leaders that we haven't seen anything from Bill Barr. Kind of makes you wonder what he's up to. And Hurricane Zeta that we discussed on the program last night. Hurricane Zeta, referred to this morning by Mika Brzezinski as Hurricane Zeta. Go figure. Hurricane Zeta has hit. It's made landfall in Louisianistan, poor, battered Louisianistan, coming ashore with 110-mile-an-hour winds. Louisianistan has been struck by five separate hurricanes this year. And the hurricane warning goes all the way from Morgan City, Louisiana, to the Mississippi-Alabama line. I know that area well. It's where the two boot heels of Mississippi and Alabama meet. And it also encompasses the greater metropolitan, oh dear, New Orleans area. I know there's a lot of maggots down there, but there's a lot of awful good people, too. And for those, best wishes and hopes that perhaps, please, 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 we can get Joe Biden in office so that we can get back to the business of being able to somewhat handle these natural disasters, because one of the things that will attend his presidency, if in fact he does get in, is more and fiercer of these. Hell, we're not even done with the current hurricane season yet. Oh, and a treat, by the way, I hope. Had a phone conversation earlier today with a dear friend of the program and formerly a broadcaster on this network. And that, and it should tickle if he hears this. If he hears this as he's on his way home, it should tickle Steve from Georgia Stan to no end. Somewhere around the top of the hour, we will be joined by the one, the only, the mellifluous Guy James from down Florida way. And I'm really looking forward to this. I got to thinking the other day, you know. With with time drawing short for the end of the election season, really needed to get Guy James on the air here and get his perspective from down Florida way, where he is a blue speck in a great sea of maggot red. You may have heard the clip of Nitwit Nero talking about a red wave. There's going to be a red wave. Yeah. And Randy Radar just told me I had to visit the doctor's office for an annual physical today, and I wasn't happy about going there. I don't blame you. But the thing is, with the way things are going, if you hadn't gone today, you might not have been able to go for months because, well, the Rona, otherwise known as the Don-demic, the Trump pandemic, is actually worse than it was when we shut the country down, sorta, back in March. Germany and France are ablaze. And being a competent national leader, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany has instituted shutdown measures in Germany. The same is happening in France. People don't like it, but, well, sometimes it's not about what you like or don't like. It's what you have to do to save lives. Of late, of course, you know that Nitwit Nero has been referring to COVID-19 as a fake news media conspiracy. All they want to talk about is COVID. And so picking up on where Obama left off yesterday, this morning on my filthy morning habit, they were discussing and chuckling a bit about the fact that COVID Caligula is actually jealous of the media coverage that a virus is getting. Because the size of a virus is also about the size of his intellect. He's jealous of a virus's media coverage. But as BuzzFeed reported, unlike the spikes in the U.S. in the spring and summer, which hit hardest in the Northeast and the Sun Belt, the current surge is happening nationwide. COVID-19 cases are currently rising in almost every state. Saskia Popescu, who's an epidemiologist at the University of Arizona and a member of the Federation of American Scientists Coronavirus Task Force, a real coronavirus task force as opposed to the phony baloney pro-wrestling one in the White House, said, "What we're seeing right now is not only worrisome with such widespread transmission and high case counts, but with impending holidays, likely travel, and people moving indoors due to colder weather, I'm increasingly concerned that this will be a rather steep and long third wave." Another scientific expert pointing out that he said, this individual said, you're doing a lot wrong. Actually, the headline from Best Life was, "I'm a doctor, and here's the worst thing you're doing is COVID surges. Attending indoor gatherings is just simply a bad idea." last weekend when I took the barbecue over to my buddy Lewis and the team there at Secret Sandwich Society. By the way, voted in West Virginia Living Magazine, apparently voted the best sandwich in West Virginia. See, I haven't been kidding. Lewis and I were talking, and Lewis and we were both wearing masks. But he said, this is terrifying because the holiday season's coming. And between Thanksgiving and Christmas, people are going to be LARPing and grabalating and smollicking and lollygagging and spraying and spewing and hooting and singing and hugging and, yeah, all over each other. And so the doctor, Leo Nasola, M.D., said, I understand how it feels not to be able to say goodbye or give your family member a last hug because I lost a loved one from COVID. We must do all we can to avoid getting infected with the virus and refrain from gathering indoors and spreading the virus to other people. We can avoid more trouble if we each do our part. With that, here are the four places you need to avoid right now, or at the very least, exercise extreme caution. Those four places indoor gatherings, large or small, bars, houses of worship, political rallies. Seems pretty simple. I'm just pleased that Dr. Nasola actually included churches. Because, of course, with the Christmas season coming, people feel compelled to run out to their local gospel sharp emporium and sing at the top of their lungs about angels that they've heard are getting high. And apropos of the season and apropos of last night, we three clods from Omaha are spending Christmas in our car. Jesus God. He went to Omaha, Nitwit Nero did. Went to Omaha to campaign for one electoral vote because of the way that Nebraska splits its electoral college votes. And there were thousands of maggots in the near freezing cold at Epley Airfield in Nebraska Stan last night. And then when the rally was over and they were left with the warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow, they huddled together in their viral spewing masses, waiting for buses that were never going to come. Because the buses couldn't reach the maggots. Seven maggots were taken to hospitals in the greater Omaha area. A 65-year-old male who got a little excited about what President Trump was talking about and began to experience weakness was carted off to the hospital. Law enforcement officials located one elderly individual, frozen cold, unable to move, with what was described as altered mental status. Yeah, Jesus Christ, we'll probably find a couple yet looking like those Incan mummies that pop up every now and again on top of Andean peaks in Colombia and Peru and whatnot. Chile. And yeah, 30 people received medical treatment at the tent itself. And the Nitwit Nero campaign said, we've got plenty of buses. The only problem being that the exits were the two-lane roads that led to the airbase were all directed outward for people who drove in. And all of this happened. 6,000 people with barely a mask in sight showed up to hear Nitwit Nero grunt and bark and hoot his myriad complaints. Petty jealousies and grievances that they'd all heard before. But then again, you know, come on, if by some miracle George Harrison and John Lennon came back from the great beyond, you'd stand in the freezing cold to hear the Beatles again, wouldn't you? Sure you would. And so here in less than 14 days, there will be a massive spike in the Omaha area. Hogan Gidley, who was one of the top spokes creeps in the Maggot administration, was interviewed on CNN. It did not, didn't go well. Let's just put it that way.
Are near capacity. And so
hold on.
Hospitals in Wisconsin are near capacity. And so does that give you any pause, or the vice president, any pause about going there and holding a big rally?
No, it doesn't. The vice president has the best doctors in the world around him. They've obviously contact traced and have come to the conclusion it's fine for him to be out on the campaign trail. The American people have the right under the First Amendment to peaceably assemble, too. The fact is, we are seeing some good news about coronavirus.
Hospitals in Wisconsin are near.
I don't think the concern was with Mike Pencilneck Geek. But did you notice? Well, we don't have to worry about Mike Pence. He's got great doctors. He can get $200,000 worth of medical treatment without batting an eyelash. And mother won't put up a fuss much. And not an iota of concern for the thousands of American citizens, Wisconsinians, badgers, who will put their lives at hazard. But then again, there's an ancient legal doctrine called assumption of the risk. And that says that when there's something dangerous going on and you choose to do it, knowing full well how dangerous it is, well, you're engaging in assumption of the risk. You have assumed the risk attendant upon doing that thing. So, I guess that's one of the things that one of the doctrines or one of the ideas behind the maggot campaign asking all the maggots to sign releases saying that they promise not to sue the Trump campaign. Because, frankly, the Trump campaign doesn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, seeing as how most of the insiders have already grifted most of the goods. But that's why they have them sign those releases. Yes, I know I could get sick and die by making a pilgrimage to hear my God Emperor speak, and I understand that I am assuming the risk thereof. What's that? An obligatory Star Trek reference. Remember the episode Enemy Within? Lee in New York asks. Kirk split in two. Crew stuck on the planet freezing. Interestingly, Trump corresponds to the evil Kirk. Deceptive, rapist, angry, but with the skill to present as a leader. Well, that might be the only big distinction there. And so enter a comedian by the name of Blair Erskine, who offered up her take of what it must have been like last night to be an elderly maggot having gone to hear the God Emperor speak.
I'm having a great time. I can't feel my body, but I don't really need my body. This is about Trump's body. I think this whole thing's been blown way out of proportion, you know? Like, yeah, they didn't let us drive our cars here, but it's because they said, you know, our cars are poor, and that doesn't look good on TV. You know, you're a TV person, you know that. I think he did this to teach us a lesson. I really do. What? What was that lesson? Well, that's not really for me to know. And that's actually pretty nasty of you to ask. Democrats want to have their bus rides and have their bus rides back too. This isn't the Polar Express. Tom Hanks isn't in charge of this thing. He's in Greece being a pedophile. No, I don't feel like he abandoned us. No. Listen, I would walk 750 miles in below zero temperatures, nip nude, just to hear him speak.
Nip nude.
Maybe that's not appropriate to say, but yes, I've seen some elderly people passed out and unresponsive. But to be honest, the only reason there's so many of those people is because the media keeps counting them. And so if people like you guys weren't counting the old people that were on the ground, there wouldn't be as many.
Yeah, okay. Definite cowbell for Blair Erskine. If you people in the media weren't counting them, there wouldn't be as many old people on the ground. But we have a new phrase, and it's always good to learn something new each and every program. Nip nude. Yes. Nip nude. The visual alone is striking. Yes, I do. I do. Jug of Punch says, you know this is a parody. Yes, I do know it. That's why I introduced her as comedian Blair Erskine. Yeah. And for those of you who have seen the movie The Ring, you know the plot of it is that you pick up the phone and you hear the words, 7 days. Well, the geniuses at the Lincoln Project are back at it again. This, of course, is an unpaid placement.
The left is going nuts. You need to get on the internet right now. My opponent has raised more money than anybody.
She goes to answer the phone.
Instagram.com. They're going crazy. Help me.
Help me. I don't know. The only thing I would have added to that is the last help me from Lindsey Graham. I would have gone over and picked up a quick clip from Warner Brothers cartoons and made that Daffy Duck saying,
"Help me, mother."
Or maybe the
"Help me"
from The Fly. That would have been a nice back reference. That would have been very creative. Oh yes, it would have. And then, with the ongoing criticism of the super spreader events that Nitwit Nero insists on holding, we have a soundbite, and this isn't a parody. This isn't comedy. This is for real. This is, of course, Precious Princess I Wanka My Daddy Trump Kushner explaining why her father dances to the Village People. Get the hockey puck. No, really. Oh, what's that song? Asks Megan. And I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who talked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. That takes on a whole new meaning with this maggot crowd, Megan says. Yes, it does, and you get a cowbell. That's DJ quality. Subject line, Trump and Dennis Miller. Matt in San Francisco says, 45's rallies caused me to think of these two guys. Trump actually thinks he's funny. He's found a group of people who think what he's saying is humorous, which, if that was all it was, would be fairly harmless. The problem comes in with the fact that he's not funny, and what he's doing is dangerous and, in some cases, deadly. Oh, good comparison. Well done, Matt. It's a pro-level evening here at the Horn. So, yeah, Precious Princess, I wank my daddy, Trump Kushner.
There's also such a different feel. You look at a...
The first voice you hear is that of former White House spokescreep Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, which must give Precious Princess Iwanka my daddy Trump Kushner the creeping horrors to be in such close proximity to someone who probably still has the dust of Arkansas hog farms on her. That is what she's doing now, right? Jethreen Bodine?
President Trump event and rally, and it's fun. People are having a good time. They're celebrating being Americans versus you look at the opposite, and it's just doom and gloom everywhere. And I, for one, love the optimistic version of our country a lot better, and I love that spirit and energy that he brings.
You know, Sarah, I'm sure you've heard him say this, but he really believes that a big part of his job is to be a cheerleader for America. And you see it. Look, he fights and he negotiates tough when he deals with foreign leaders. And the number of times you and I have been in these meetings where we'll walk out of a trade negotiation meeting and say, man, I'm glad he represents the United States. Because he can be really tough, but he also views it as his job to believe in this country, to believe in its people, to believe in its potential, and to be its greatest champion. And some of that...
I guess that includes believing in QAnon, and believing in the Proud Boys, and the Boogaloo Boys, and I guess now the Patriot Front. Negotiating a trade deal. Yeah, those are the meetings where he walks out with walks in with a hand-tailored dress shirt on and walks out with no shirt whatsoever.
That is just being the happy warrior.
Warrior? You know,
I'm...
Wait a minute. Didn't we call Paul Wellstone the happy warrior? Was it Paul Wellstone? I don't think there's a comparison.
Nagging him the whole time he's in the hospital to relax a little bit, take a couple of minutes. He's feeling good.
Wait. The doctors were nagging him?
That is just being the happy warrior. I'm nagging him the whole time he's in the hospital to relax a little bit, take a couple of minutes. He's feeling good, but
does that mean we get to henceforward refer to her as Precious Princess Iwanka my daddy Trump Kushner the nag?
Relax. The first time he hits the road, he's like doing the YMCA and dancing all over the stage. I'm like.
Does Precious Princess Iwanka my daddy Trump Kushner the nag realize that doing the YMCA and, you know, Matt, as the official Horn Den Mother, you can chime in on this. Do they even know? Darlene in Connecticut, having heard just about all she can stand. What bullshit is this? She's indeed a feckless see you next Tuesday. And there we go. Lee in New York. Dinner ruined. Iwanka gave me the image of Donald Trump overweight and in a cheerleader outfit. Thanks a lot, Iwanka. doing, Donald Trump doing the YMCA. Matt pointing out, negotiations? Maybe I'm wrong, but a guy who can't get through a 60-minute interview is hardly a happy warrior. And we haven't even gotten to the doing the YMCA part yet. Wonder if that contributes to the spread of coronavirus, doing the YMCA. On both levels, I think it probably does. Meanwhile, Angelo, in the People's Republic of the Bronx, points out, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and it bears repeating. Trump couldn't make a drug deal in a room full of jonesing drug addicts with $50 bills in their hands. Well, I mean, it depends on how you define a deal, Angelo. He'd walk out of the room. They'd have all the drugs. They'd still have their $50 bills. And they'd have his shirt. Bob, you're not going to believe this, but my sister used to be a high school cheerleader. The visual I get of Donnie wearing a red, white, and blue skirt and red, white, and blue pom-poms and that long red tie of his make me think that he's dressing for Vladimir. Oh, dear. Somebody might warn Mike Pence and my dad to get out of Trump's backside before Vladimir shows up. I'm just saying. Your buddy Dave in the blind. Meanwhile, Lee in New York adds, YMCA, Trump does not read, and cannot spell YMCA. And, yes, we have heard from the Horn's Den mother. Subject line, Iwanka. Oh, Iwanka, go brush your hair, bitch. Stephen, thank you. You restore my faith in humanity, Matt. Stephen, New York, pointing out his daughter. She really is fucking disgusting. That she is. Meanwhile, Randy in PA is humming merrily along. You can hang out with all the boys. It's fun to stay at the... Right. No singing. I mean, Kyle got us down to 365, so there will be no singing. Now, Guy James has a beautiful singing voice, and he'll be on here in about 13 minutes or so. And we'll see. We'll see maybe if he can give us a few dulcet strains of YMCA. Although I'm sure he'd much prefer to give us a rousing chorus of "Flow Gently, Sweet Afton." It's one of those great barbershop quartet songs. And since last week we were talking about Don Knotts and Barney Fife, nobody sings "Flow Gently, Sweet Afton" quite like Barney did. And Trump would not use semaphore because he only speak English, says Lee in New York. Was he being a tough negotiator when Kim winked at Sarah Sandbags? Asks James in Illinois, the happy warrior was FDR. Then Hubert Humphrey took it. So the Minnesota connection with Wellstone. Okay, so there's an entire pedigree there. Nice. Thank you for the... Thank you for the information, James. But back to Iwanka. Ew. Oh, and Matt adds, I've danced to YMCA countless times at a myriad of gay clubs. At no time did I witness anyone dancing in a way that resembled the blow-up man outside a car dealership. You know, legs won't move, just kind of, you know what the blow-up, the stick blow-up man, yep, right. Perfect, Matt. And Lee in New York adds, one sign of dementia, your children have to explain your actions. Ooh. Stephen New York says, I can't wait until he has a rally with the song In the Navy. I know. Don't whisper that one into the ears of the universe. Don't do that. He could visit a Navy base in Florida or the sub base in Groton, Connecticut. And that wouldn't make Darlene happy at all. And we're back, says Arthur, with the Trump VC shopping channel. Wow, all this for just 67 easy payments of $7.99, all while supplies last. And while supplies last, also this Brazilian power crystal. You guys are on this evening. Megan's simply asking, Trump dancing. Is he dancing or having a seizure? That's for Megan and Arthur. Yes.
It's not enough that you're doing all these rallies and you're up on stage and you're speaking for an hour and a half without a guitar.
Without a guitar? What? He wants George Bush's guitar that he played upside down while people were drowning and floating face down in the fetid waters of Katrina? Without a guitar. Reminds me of our dear, dear friend Edward in Dallas, who, though gone, is not forgotten, and used to tell us the little and told us the little Johnny joke about the about little Johnny trying to craft a poem there in class, and you know things never go well with little Johnny. The teacher called on him and he said, "Here I stand out in the hall, watching a cockroach crawl up the wall." The teacher said, "Little Johnny, it's not polite to say cock. You may remain in the hall for another 5 minutes and try again." 5 minutes later, she calls little Johnny back in. Says, "Have you rethought your poem, Johnny?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am." "Here I stand out in the hall, watching a roach crawl up the wall without a cock." Posthumous cowbell for Edward in Dallas.
He loves to say, "Imagine if I played an instrument," which is hilarious.
Oh, he plays something.
But he's up there, he's working. And then he's dancing off the stage. So he's a remarkable human being. And you know what he needs?
Yeah, well, he's remarkable. The human being part is subject to question. That we do not have sufficient empirically gathered data yet to reach that conclusion. And it needs to be peer-reviewed as well.
You need that kind of energy to prevail. You cannot be a low energy person, as he often says in this business, because it is so hard and it is so taxing, and you need that kind of spirit.
I thought he didn't believe in taxing. Oh, I prepaid.
It's probably the same way it is with his Visa and his MasterCards. They're prepaid too.
And it's fun to watch. Sometimes, have you been watching all these videos on Instagram and TikTok of people doing the Trump?
Yes,
like, it's
I love
like
it.
The feet planted, they don't move, but the body's going, the arms are.
Be careful,
I've been
be
seeing
careful.
That
you're
going
to be the next one.
I've been making
featured.
Fun of that dance my whole life, and now it's cool. Like, as a daughter, I mean, I used to say, "Come on, Dad, come on."
Yeah.
Only but
president.
Now it's like the thing.
Only
no, your dad's like the thing.
President Trump can make that dance cool. So
yes.
But it is amazing the energy that he brings. I still don't know how he does it.
Neither do the rest of us. And all of this took place in a room in Charlotte, North Carolina, where, of course, masks were persona non grata. Ill. Lee in New York. Trump campaign music list. My first recommendation, Nowhere Man by the Beatles. Steve in New York, his daughter and Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, are they punking us? This is so much a caricature, I almost can't believe this is real. Well, if it wasn't a real video clip, Steve, I could not have played it on this program. I know how he does it, Steve adds. Adderall and dexamethasone. Emphasis on the word meth. Kyle asking, is low energy the only insult they have? For all the time they spend insulting others, you'd think they'd be more creative.
Well, it's not a matter of being more creative. It's a matter of having the ability. And they're not creative people. They're money grubbers. That's all. What's more what's cringier? KS Musk cringier. Her voice or what she's saying, asks Megan. And this piece of breaking news as we move toward the top of the hour, the end of the first hour of the program, and I guess the end of the filibobster. Will wonders never cease? Mirabile dictu. The Supreme Court of the United States has refused the request of Pennsylvania Republicans to expedite a ruling on their request to halt the extension of the absentee ballot deadline. Well, before you break out the champagne, pay attention to some rather significant words in that headline, that breaking news headline from the New York Times. They refused the Republican plea to expedite the ruling. This is a case of please don't throw me in that briar patch. Because they're not going to expedite the ruling. They're going to wait and see how the balloting goes in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And then Amy Toney's parrot and Ann's boy Neil and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Sammy shoot the black kid in the back of the head, Alito. And Brat will be enough to create a 5-4 decision to try to hand Pennsylvania to Nitwit Nero at the last minute. That's how that works. See, Kyle already figured it out. So they're going to wait until Election Day to fuck us over. Kyle says they've planned this all out. You guys, you're getting it. You're getting it. It's happening. You know, every day I'm just proud to be associated with a radio community like ours, where y'all reach the bottom line before I can even say it. Makes for some good radio. So let me take a moment here. There'll be a moment of silence while I, not that kind of a moment of silence. But let me see if I can get Guy James on the line. Marking.
Hello,
Guy James. This is Bob Kincaid of the Head On Radio Network calling. Are we reaching?
Yes, we are.
And I hope I didn't interrupt dinner. I was sure you were probably just now sitting down to dinner at your favorite South Asian restaurant that serves beef.
Oh, Grace, a fine filet mignon and baked potato with sour cream and butter and... Yeah, that sounds good.
Right tasty, even.
Yes, sir.
How in the world are you, my friend? It has been entirely too long.
Well, not bad. I mean, I the years take their toll. And I would like to mention to everybody that is younger that when they mention that term golden years, it's more like 10, really.
Yeah, at best, brass.
That's for sure.
So, but, you've had, well, I'd say like anybody in Florida, you've probably had a, and perhaps more so, you've had a rough year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's been a rough year, that's for sure. It's bizarre, really. Nobody goes anywhere or does anything, and it's just, it's crazy. I'm sure it's like that all over, but, you know, haven't done anything, haven't been any place or done anything. I mean, it's just,
But the Trumpanzees and the maggots, they're out there running wild and smollicking and grabulating and LARPing all over each other. I mean, we see the videos all the time, Guy.
Oh, I
mean, that's why Florida is one great big super spreader event these days.
Yep. Yep. That's for sure. If you had told me, 4 years ago, I expected the worst from this. I did. I really did expect the worst. I knew what we were getting into, but I had no idea. I mean, every single day I'm amazed with what goes on. I mean, something new every day. We've had, 20 incidents in 4 years that would have gotten rid of most presidents we ever had, or ruined their reputation or their party or just every day there's something new. And I get up every morning and go, well, what now?
Yeah. And you can't keep up.
No. I mean, the press, I don't know how they do it. We just a perfect example here recently, we got going on that tax thing a little bit, the $750 and all that. And that really and truly is probably would have affected the minds of almost everybody. And that story lasted, 2 days? And then something bigger came along. It's incredible.
I tell you, I remember hearing the first rumblings of COVID back at the beginning of 2020. Did you see what the past 10 months have been coming?
No, I didn't. I of course, when he got on and started going on talking about it, I thought, well, maybe this is something serious. Cause I didn't believe him right off. I mean, it's standard now. When the man talks, if you got any brains at all, don't believe anything he says. So, I mean, anything. If he swore an oath on a Bible that the sun was, coming up in the east, I wouldn't believe it. I just wouldn't. And we'd be, you'd be well advised never to believe him on anything, but I didn't. You know, when this thing got going bad, I mean, God, who could have known? And here we are again. I don't know what it's like in Beckley, but here in Fort Myers, the hospital, my wife has to have an elective surgery, and you can't even get it done right now. So hospitals are full, and all the Republicans are walking around without the masks, just proud as hell. And it's a wacky world.
Yeah, what? Washed in the blood of Jesus. I ain't gonna get no Rona. Right. Yep.
That's right. I'm
well, Guy, for the younger members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, let's do a quick jaunt down memory lane and just for instance, Steve from Georgistan is moderating in the. In the Horn chat room right now, and he says, I was listening to Guy via the internet every Saturday way back during the dial-up squealing modem days. Tell people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I think, I got a plaque sitting here. It says December 7th, 2002. That's when we did our first show. And we... A friend of mine came in one day and we'd been talking about it for quite a while. And he was my best friend. He came in again and says, guess what? I got a spot on the local radio station here. Let's do it. And he, okay, fine. So we set off and did that. And then we moved to another station and for several years. And the most amazing thing happened is that Wink Radio here in Fort Myers, 92.5, the most listened to station here in town, and they've well, they're as far right as you could possibly get, except for the local one that's called Trump Radio now. But yeah, we actually have one that's called Trump Radio. I wonder if that'll continue to be after the election. But anyway, we went on for several years that way, and finally they came around and said, your program does not meet the needs of our right, our audience, our conservative audience. After, I don't know, after 6 or 7 years.
The general manager finally listened to the actual program, in other words.
Yeah. He actually did.
Well, and, I've got something loaded up here. It's not the throw the third switch, but let's see. I got the hour two open here queued up. Let me run that real quick.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you?
Man, it gives me tingles, Guy. All these years later, it gives me tingles.
Oh, I love that. I loved that opening. I really did. I had a friend help me produce that, and it was just, I was so proud of that and happy every day that it came on. I did. I enjoyed it. I often think, I think back the course in those days where, so when I first met you, we were out doing radio rows for, on campaign for America's Future and some of those folks in Washington, D.C. and visiting our home office in Washington just having a good time over it. And of course, 100 miles an hour talking about the politics at the time and how bad it was sometimes we thought it was. And then, oh, my God, we've arrived here now. The metamorphosis of where we've been.
Let me ask you this. I have pointed out from time to time on the program that while Nitwit Nero is awful, he did not just spring from the American body politic fully formed. A lot of ground had to be laid to make it possible for Trump to eventually be president. And a lot of that ground got laid, frankly, between January 20th, 2001 and January 19th, 2009. Did it not?
I absolutely agree. I do. I knew what was going on, but I guess it just didn't soak in how bad it was. I really didn't. I have such terrible feelings these days. I've been a proud American all my life and right now I'm ashamed. I'm really ashamed of what our people have become. I told somebody the other day, if I was amongst a group of, foreigners, I'd probably tell them I was Canadian. I'm just ashamed. I really am. It's to have a man like this leading the country is one thing, but to have 40 some people of the country, 40 some percent of the country actually rooting him on and following, that's the thing. That's the bizarre world of the whole thing that he's got 40 some percent of the country, cheering him on. And I'm deeply, deeply ashamed of that. I really am.
Well, and I think that's one of the questions we sort of have to answer in the long run, Guy. Were we once better than this, or have we always been this bad and now we are simply exposed?
Oh, Bob, I hope that's not true. there's solid reason for thinking that. I see that. But I hope that's not true. God, I hope that's not true. There have been things happen in this country where we've proven, I think, that we're better than this. But right now, I don't know what it would take to restore my faith in America. We're in, you know, it's right now we're in for some difficult times. I'm not one of those who thinks when the election is over, everything's going to be brighter, you know, rosy red and cheery. But I think we're in for some bad times. I think this election's going to be rough. And I think there's going to be serious problems over it. Can't even envision what all the problems might be. But I don't know. It's just got me really worried. I think every day I think there's something significant going to happen nowadays. And Trump is, you know, he's ramping up his rhetoric every day. I don't know what else he has to do except you know, hold his hand up and like Hitler did. And yeah, every time I see him, I think of Mussolini. I do. I'm ashamed of that I think that way of the President of the United States. But, oh, my God.
Well, it's, I guess, you know, I'm a born cynic because it feels to me like the maggots, the Trumpanzees, well, they arose from the cesspit of the teabagger movement. And of course the teabaggers arose from the John Birchers and the Klan. And that's been the Republican Party all along. God.
It has.
And at one point in time, I guess, you know, back in the days when the John Birchers were coming to life, they were a fringe element of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But as time proceeded, the Republican Party became more and more and more a reactionary reactionary white wing extremist movement. I mean, for instance, we've talked about on so many occasions the fact that the first speech that Ronald Reagan gave in 1980 after receiving the Republican nomination for president was at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds in Philadelphia, Mississippi. The very same place where Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman were murdered by the Klan. And yeah. In that speech, he dog-whistled states' rights to a group of adoring so-called Reagan Democrats who knew exactly what he was talking about when he said, states' rights.
That's right. That's exactly right. He helped awaken the beast. The beast was there all along. It just helped wake it up and give it some credence.
And nowhere, I think, is that more apparent or obvious, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, than in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've lived here many years now. I'm originally from Ohio. A proud Buckeye. It's a funny thing. When I first moved here, I was at the beach one day, and this fellow and I got to talking. And I think he was from Illinois. He's a former Illini fan.
Oh, that's rough.
He looked at me. And, yeah, and he, when we got ready to park, he said to me, "Oh, where are you going to go? What are you going to do now? Are you going to be a Knowles, a Gator, or a Hurricane?" I called my brother that night and I said, you know, he doesn't understand, does he?
Once a Buckeye, always a Buckeye.
That's right. But here we are in the middle of it. And it's, you know, it's bad when you all of a sudden have realized, and it didn't hit me until just 4 years ago. I didn't realize that where I live, this particular area here that probably 7 out of every 10 people I pass is a Trumper. And that's the truth. I remember one time I had James Carville on my show. I'll never forget it. And you know how James is. And he says, by the way, where did your show originate from? And I said, Fort Myers, Florida. He said, are you crazy? As only James can say it. But he was right. And, you know, here doing a rather innocuous radio show, ended up with death threats and trips to the FBI over it and all that sort of thing. It just, looking over my shoulder, have people call you and say, I know where you're at. I know where you live. But, it's difficult. So you learn to keep your mouth shut out in public, but, couldn't do that on a radio show.
But of course, you do remain a diehard Buckeye. What do you think of the notion of playing college ball in the middle of a pandemic? I don't know if you saw the news or not, but the Wisconsin Nebraska game just got shit canned.
Oh, well, I figured that. No, I didn't. I didn't know that. There's going to be more of that, and it's going to be a troubled season. That's for sure. Probably would have been better off not to have it. There's no good answer to it. What do you do with thousands of athletes that have worked their butts off to be ready for a season and cancel it? Is going to hurt. It's going to hurt one way or another.
It seems to me like the NCAA could have rectified that by simply saying everybody who's on the roster now gets an extra year of eligibility.
Yeah, that would have made sense. That would have made sense. Of course, I heard today that Trump said that he's the one that managed to let us have college football this year. He was responsible for letting us have it. So,
yeah, I
saved college football.
Yes. No, I think he claims he saved football in general because of the NFL too.
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me. No, it hasn't been drilled into me yet what a savior he is, but. I watch him nowadays and I just laugh on one hand and cry on the other that, oh my God, this is the way things are. And know that, you know, I see those adoring crowds where he's speaking and I think, well, where am I? What's happened?
We keep asking that question. I guess we'll ask it until he's no longer in office. What is it that they adore, Guy?
I think they see the big mouth, rhetoric prone, racist.
Do they see the same thing in him that Italians saw in Mussolini?
That's right.
Bluster, braggadocio. Mixed in with bravado and some threatening bully boy language.
Yeah, and we're tough. You know, we're tough. We're just the toughest. And if I tell everybody that, why, they'll believe we're the toughest too. And God bless America. it's fascinating to me. It really is. I don't really. Of course, I the past few months I haven't spoken to anybody personally, hardly at all. But I got to the point where even online on Facebook or something, I don't even argue with him because I figured out long ago that it was useless. It's just absolutely useless.
Well, that's like arguing with a monkey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Under the best of circumstances, eventually, if you prevail, the monkey's just going to start flinging poo.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's a great way to put it, Bob. I quit doing it. I really did. I figured, you know, there's no damn use trying to talk sense into them. I asked, you know, early on, I'd ask people, do you really level with me now? You know, you've been around the block. I tell people, do you really think? One of my criteria for a man to be the president of the United States, first, the number one tops, is you got to be a decent man. you got to be decent. You got to have human qualities that are good and decent. Do you think Trump has any of that?
Not
and
a one.
I never once ever got an answer.
No.
Never, ever got an answer on that.
Well, y'all had and Bill Clinton. Was he decent?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I just.
I mean, he murdered Vince Foster, or that Hillary did.
Right. He did, that's right. Buried over there in the park somewhere.
Things may be changing, Guy. Let me ask you this. I mean, you and obviously there's a vast difference in the population of, say, West Virginia and Florida. But attitudinally, not so much. Maybe different accents, but the attitudes are decidedly similar, although perhaps yours are a little bit, you know, you get better weather, hurricanes notwithstanding. But here, you know, in 2016, it was, God, what, 69 to 31% Trump over Hillary, something crazy like it. We were the Trumpiest state in the nation on November 9th, 2016. If it turns out that here in West Virginia or there in Florida, well, in West Virginia, if he only beats Biden by, say, 60 to 40 or 55 to 45, that'll feel, well, it won't feel like a win, but it'll feel like progress. Is there, now I keep watching the polling data and everything, and I'm skittish as hell about it, but there are people saying that Biden could win Florida. Do you see that as a possibility? I need all the hope I can get, Guy.
Well, I see it as a possibility, but not around here. It's got to be inland Florida, away from the coast, in rural areas like that, but not around here. I don't know about Miami. I don't. There might be a huge Hispanic swing. I'm not sure. I'm counting on a little bit of that. But I'll tell you what, I'll be pleasantly shocked if we do win this. Because like you, I'm not putting a whole lot of stock in the polls right now either.
But I mean, people down there have been hammered by the pandemic, and I know you've got an illegitimate governor who only became governor through the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis in Ron Monkey in Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis. And he's done everything he can to suppress evidence of the Dondemic. But people are still getting sick, and people still know people who died. And there are businesses that are gone that are never coming back.
For sure.
Don't you expect that to have some sort of an impact on this, or does he just get a pass for everything, Guy?
Where I live, it seems he does. I haven't. I'll be truthful. I wish I had a different route to go here with what I'm going to say, but I don't see it. I really don't see it that people have awakened. I hope deep down inside they've thought about it and maybe will change their ways. But it's a sickness that's the meanest one I've ever seen as far as people being indoctrinated. We've seen indoctrination.
Now, wait, are you talking about Trumpism or COVID-19?
Trumpism. Yeah. I mean, it's a sickness that it's hard to explain. It really is. I don't know if there is a cure for it, Bob. I really don't, except time.
Jesus, let me ask you about the maggots there. I mean, that's the term I use, maggots, you know, make America great again, Trump supporters, maggots.
Yeah.
Is it mostly, I mean, there's, you know that old saying, Florida's God's waiting room. But is it mostly older Floridians, or does maggotry cross demographic boundaries?
Well, you know, Bob, it would be convenient for me to think that it was just older Americans. It'd be convenient to think that, you know, you don't meet very many native Floridians. You just don't. Always the question is, where are you from? And you're going to get an answer outside of Florida somewhere, mostly in the north. And that's one of the things that puzzles me. If I was in a Southerner's going to love this, I would have expected it, perhaps, if I was just laying here in the deep south somewhere, and they talk like that, and they had the racism awakened in a big time, a big way, and all the southern things that I abhor. But it's mostly Northerners that live here. So the sickness somehow just spread to places I didn't think it could. I really didn't.
Now, are you still in touch with your friends and family back in Ohio?
Oh, yeah.
So you've kind of got your feet in two separate worlds. Ohio is said to be in play.
Yeah, I hope to God it is. I can see it changing over. I can see it swapping over. I hope so. I'm putting a lot of hopes on that. I certainly hope it does. Just would make me feel better, that's for sure. Although, you know, from a huge family, I mean, I only got one sibling, but the family's monster size. I don't know very many of them that aren't Trumpers right now. I've spoken with them about it, and I've learned not to. I hate that. We really hate that something like that's divided people, but it has. There's more division in this country right now than in my lifetime, that's for certain.
Well, you're old enough. I mean, you were a young man, but, you know, right. You saw the you saw the civil rights movement. You saw the division that occurred in the in the old white guard in that era. Are you telling me that you see this as worse?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Much more so. Much more so. I, you know, just being a young white boy from rural Northwest Ohio, as white picket fence a place you could ever see, that's for sure, where I was raised. I was, I was just telling somebody the other day, my first quarter at Ohio State, went over to Mershon Auditorium one day. That was the big auditorium on campus, and just on High Street. And George Wallace was coming to town. So I went over there, a friend of mine and I, and we walked in, and there was, I think Mershon holds, I don't know, somewhere between four to 6,000. I can't tell you for sure. But we had to be the only two white guys in there. And when George Wallace came out and walked out on the stage, I've never heard anything like it. Not at a Buckeye football game. Never have I heard wild boos and people carrying on. And George Wallace walked up to the microphone and said, well, I really can't repeat what he said, but he said something that to a Northwest Ohio white boy that had not an ounce of racialism in his body, didn't even know what it was about. He said something so outrageous to me that I just sat back in my seat. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And, of course, they booed him off the stage, and he never spoke. But I'll never forget that moment when it hit me. And that is the moment that it hit me, that there was outright racial hatred in this country that I wasn't aware of. I really wasn't. Didn't know it. Never thought before. I mean, God, what was wrong with me? That's where the way life was. And I realized it was like that everywhere. But, wow. The realization that was possible to happen in this country, it really frightened me. It really did.
And yet you see this time now as more trouble.
It is, most certainly is. It's out of the closet. It's out in the open. There's no longer fear, or you know, people aren't a bit feared to show it nowadays. Not a bit. At least they kept their mouth shut over the years, and maybe talked amongst themselves. But now it's out in the open.
Well, the rise of the internet, I think, played a big role in putting that out in the open.
Oh, sure, that's for certain. You know, and it's helped spawn these supremacists. I tell you what, Bob, I've never kind of off the subject a little bit, but I never probably shouldn't say this, but I don't own a gun. And I really never have. Was at home on the farm, my dad would go hunting, and we'd go with him. But I didn't eat game, never have.
You don't eat chicken. I mean,
that's true. No chicken, no fish. I'm a beef and pork boy, that's for sure. But the gun thing, when I see state capitals with guys in the Capitol building with AR-15s slung over their shoulders, dressed in fatigues, with that look on their face, don't mess with me, boy. I wonder what the hell's going on. How can that be? How is it possible that that's happening in this country? I mean, do you see that, folks? Do you see that? Do you not realize that that's wrong? But there it is, and there they are out in the open, and we got stand back and stand by.
Are you surprised at the and with all apologies to our members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Michigan, you have the classic Buckeye disdain for that football team up there. Are you surprised that the so-called, and I don't even like the word militia. It's not a militia. It's not within the meaning of the Second Amendment. It's not.
No.
But are you surprised to see that level of violent rhetoric up there? I mean, is that another case of you thought we were better than this?
Oh, every time I see it, every time I hear it, I'm thinking, I'm dreaming. I must be dreaming. This can't be happening. People, where are the people with clear minds and thoughts of what's right and wrong? Where are they? How could you allow this to happen? You know, that kid up in, where was it, in Wisconsin that ran down the street shooting people. Why, he was, his mother dropped him off. He was part of one of these groups. And there's no outrage over that. I just can't believe what I'm seeing every day. Like I said, I wake up every morning and thought, well, what will it be today? There'll be something today. There'll be something.
Have you
today.
Seen any of that gun toting craziness there where you are in Florida?
Well, not lately because I
mean you're a stand and blaze state.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You, that's right. There was a case here recently where that happened. Stand your ground. But no, I've not seen it because I haven't been out anywhere to see it. And I sure hope there's not been any of those groups marching around here. I'm aghast. I really am. I don't know what to think about that.
Well, Lee in New York has provided me with some interesting numbers from electoralvote.com that you might find interesting. In 2016, early voting in Florida yielded 134,700 people voting. In 2020, yeah. Early voting in Florida amounts to 433,700 people.
Yeah.
That's a 222% increase. Now, here's where it's interesting. Of all voters, 56% are Biden voters and 44% are Trump voters, early voting. New voters, Biden is 55 to 45. Infrequent voters, Biden is 53 to 47.
Yeah.
And all of that will be counted by the time November the 3rd is done, theoretically at least. I mean, with all, you know, with all cautious remembrances to 2000. So that Florida could be declared on election night.
Could be.
Government and vote counting in Florida can be such a hot mess, Guy. Is there a possibility of a repeat of 2000 and the Brooks Brothers riot and all of that madness?
Sure. Sure there is. I'm expecting it. Not only here, but other places too. I heard here a while back how many lawyers that got ready. We've got three Supreme Court people now that worked on the Gore defeat. They're ready. They are ready to go after every possible thing they can. And I have heard here that we did have a little problem with a so-called poll watcher intimidating folks, and I know that's happening around the country. I'm expecting it, Bob. I really am. I'm expecting trouble. And I don't expect it to be over on November the 3rd or 4th or 5th.
Well,
so
the county where you are, do you have a mask mandate in place?
No, heck no.
Okay.
Mail without a, I don't go out and get the mail without a mask on. But, no, they look at that with disdain. Don't need to wear no cotton picking mask. I mean, come on.
Coronavirus will be gone on November 4th.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. It will. The press will be talking about how, you know, how great it is now. Trump has played it right. I have often said how stupid he is, but then again, there's ways he's been pretty clever. And the way he's played the media and gotten into people's minds to the extent that he has, it's maybe he's not so stupid after all. On intelligence, he's not real high. On things that he knows, he's real high. Not real high. I mean, he's without question the least knowledgeable president we've ever had. No doubt about it. How we ever got to this point with a guy that really didn't even understand government.
Yeah, there's your time travel moment. If you think back to the days when we heard George W. Bush say things like, "I know that the fish and humans can live in peace." Did it occur to you? Did it occur to you that there would be someone more stupid than that?
No, come on. You just couldn't. He thought that was the epitome. That was the end game right there for that. But no. No, if I talk to people from another country online or something, they think, what the hell is going on in the United States of America? We thought better of you. I did too. I don't know what's going on.
You're getting email. Cynthia out in the Bay Area says, "Gosh, I sure hear what Guy's saying. I'm tempted to call in, but what Trump does, I think, is empower people to hate out loud, and they love it. To them, Trump is doing good by that. Fuck."
Yeah.
Lou in PA said, "I completely agree with Guy. I'm ashamed of the whatever plus percent who vote for Trump. Sadly, I think that what has been exposed is who we are and have been. Kudos to Guy." Randy in PA says, they adore the stereotypes that he promotes. It's black and white thinking, like the cowboy shows of the 1950s. There were only white hats and black hats. There were no gray hats. because they're truly they're incapable of and I think that what Randy said reaches a deeper truth. Guy, they are incapable of nuance.
Yeah,
and
I know that
sounds like some sort of egg-headed ivory tower, the university learning from places like Columbus and Morgantown, but it's true, isn't it? I mean,
that's the way you. That's very well said, Bob. That's very well said. That encapsulated the whole mess right there.
And again, by design. It was around 1981 with Reagan entering office that we stopped teaching civics, Guy James. We stopped teaching civics.
That's right. That's so true.
And with the addition of the internet, well, you know, it's not hard to go out there and find a right-wing homeschooling website that'll tell you all about that fearsome day and December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese attacked Lewis and Clark.
Yeah. That's so true. You could pass that by Trump and he'd believe it okay. He knows so, even with the green that he is, what do you call it? I can't think of the term he used right now. A stable genius.
Yeah.
Oh my God! To say things like that and people believe it—it
the American history is a rich panoply of exceptionalism, Guy. Those plucky Republicans who held off in even though they knew it would cost them their lives, they held off the Germans at the Alamo.
Yeah.
The selfless veterans of the Bowling Green massacre and the assaults on the airports in the revolution. It goes on and on and on, and I think that's one of the things that irritates me the most. I'm sick and tired of living in a twisted, half drunk, whacked out of our minds on meth, nightmare fantasy world.
It's taken its toll. It really has. It's made life much more difficult. No question about it. You hesitate to even speak to a group anymore in person. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. I live in a fairly close community here where I'm at, and I don't really talk to them about it anymore. Of course, we don't, the way it is with the virus, we haven't talked to anybody, period. It's just all come to a crescendo here with Trump and the virus, and the whole thing is like, oh my God, life's been turned upside down.
Well, I can imagine it feels very much like that. So what are your, and that's one of the funny, not funny, but sad things. Even if things come out like the way we would want them to, it's not like you can run out into the streets and party and I don't know, turn a bottle of rye whiskey upside down and celebrate or anything like that.
rye whiskey. Oh yeah.
I told you he'd sing. I predicted you would sing.
Oh, girl, if I don't get rye whiskey, I surely will die. I tell you what, I'm looking at a bottle of it here, Bob. It's been untouched and unopened for many years, since I last saw you, I think.
Save it for November the 3rd.
Yeah.
Crack that bad boy open if things come out the way we want them to.
Yeah, that's right. I told somebody recently, I told a doctor recently, he said, do you use alcohol? And I said, well, I think about 7 or 8 years ago on an airplane, I had half a beer. Does that count? That's white rye whiskey. That sounds good.
Well, you iron a mean shirt, Guy James. By the way, Irwin out in Montana, Irwin's a native North Dakotan. He says, to Guy, I'm also from a rural area. I did hunt for a time. I do have guns, but I recoil from what happened in Michigan. See what he did there? Recoil. I grew up on a farm, too, yeah. And my family is split over Trump. I think we may be able to get over somewhat in time, but it'll be a while. And that's the larger question. We've talked here a lot, Guy, about how what faces America is not the work of one presidential term or two or even three, but rather that the amount of damage done in 4 years is going to wind up being the work of generations.
Yeah. Sad but true.
And I was going to ask you about down ballot in Florida. The presidency is the big deal. I mean, you've got House races, of course. Every House race is up, but neither of your senators are up, and your illegitimate racist governor is also firmly ensconced, right?
That's right. We're not gonna do anything down ballot. We're not gonna do anything at all. And as far as the senators, it'd be unthinkable for me to believe that any state in the country had two worse senators than we do.
Well, you got little Marco out there who spends all his time tweeting Bible verses now, oblivious to his own hypocrisy.
Yep.
Ugh.
And Scott, he was the worst governor that we could ever have had in the election. I tell you, Bob, it's fascinating. It really is.
It's like living in the middle of an anthropology documentary down there, isn't it?
Well said, Bob. Well said. That couldn't be more true. A couple hundred thousand years from now, we'll be famous.
Well, you know, I get a lot of pleasure out of reading every now and then. I've done it twice so far. Reread the entire John D. McDonald, Travis McGee series that's set down in Florida. I don't know if you ever read any of those novels, but they're really good. And they present, it's neat to read because they present a view. I mean, and John D. McDonald was a native Pennsylvanian, World War II veteran. And he moved to Florida, you know, again, from up north, and fell in love with the place. And there's a lot of, you know, Mad Men-esque sexism to it. But also there is a rather serious observation of the changes that were taking place between, say, 1960 and 1983 in Florida. And I guess it's going to continue to change, Guy. But the question is the question going forward is one of whether it be for the good or for the worse.
Well,
did you guys get hit by? I mean, I know where Fort Myers is roughly. Y'all were largely unaffected by any of the hurricanes in this bizarre year, weren't you?
That's right. This year, knock on wood, no serious problems at all. They've been passing to our west a little bit.
And now this evening, you know, we're up to Zeta in the Greek alphabet.
We're New Orleans,
and we're actually under a weather advisory this evening as a, I guess a front, and then the leading edge of Zeta are supposed to clash here, and it's supposed to absolutely pour all over West Virginia, starting tonight and all day tomorrow.
And over to D.C.
Yeah.
That's right. It's been quite a year with all the fires, and you'd have to think it's been an apocalyptic year. It really has, with what's all the things that have gone on. It's not hard to see, the end of the world this particular year. It's like, oh my God, what else could happen?
Well, I'm running a sort of an informal survey. Do you think Trump actually had COVID-19?
No, I don't. Absolutely believe he did not. I think he tried to use it. And, you know, look what a powerful man he is now. I had no COVID. I beat it because I'm tough. Me and my whole family, we got the genes, boy.
Well, I've been skeptical, too, and I think I've finally come up with an explanation that I find satisfactory.
Yeah.
I think, because, again, he's not good enough of a liar. You know, when he lies, everybody knows. It's immediately, transparently obvious that he's lying again.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering now if the White House medical staff, the real ones, I'm not talking about the phony baloney Fox News TV radio Rwanda doctors like Scott Atlas.
Right.
But I'm wondering if the doctors took a look at him and said, listen, this thing's gotten loose in the White House, and he is going to get it, and we better get him to Walter Reed for his own safety until we can get some protocols in to keep him from catching it and dying. And so they make the big production out of sending him to Walter Reed. They go ahead and they fire him up with, some sugar water, some saline. But just because he was jonesing for his Adderall, they put him on a course of dexamethasone. And that turns out to be the most awesome high he has ever felt in his life. Because remember, Noel Kassler has told us that he's been a drug addict since the early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, snorting mm-hmm. Adderall. And I think they told him he had it, even though he didn't. But they had to get him away from the White House for his own safety's sake. In other words, they ran an informal mental hygiene proceeding on him and got him to Walter Reed and got him to believe that they were doing it because they didn't want him to die from the Rona. Because they didn't want him to die from the Rona. I mean, if you're...
Lucky you have really thought this through.
Well, it's been driving me nuts, Guy.
This is the best explanation I've heard. And it makes all kinds of sense to me. It sure does.
Well, you know where it comes from? You know where it comes from? Nathan Lane and Robin Williams made a film and Gene Hackman made a film version of La Cage aux Folles many years ago that was called the Birdcage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where and of course Nathan Lane's character is a hopeless hypochondriac, and she says, I'm feeling faint, Agador. Get me another one of my Pirin tablets. And Robin Williams freaks out and says, you're giving her drugs? And Hank Azaria, who played Agador Spartacus, said, no. It's just an aspirin, but I rub out the A and the S and tell her it's a Pirin tablet. And it makes her feel all better. Well, I was watching that scene and it dawned on me, wait a minute, that's what they did with Trump. They told him that he had tested positive, so they shuffled him off to Walter Reed. I mean, because that's the only way you let him go for that godforsaken honking wave in a hermetically sealed vehicle that would otherwise be a death sentence for the Secret Service people inside.
Right, right.
And so the Secret Service people inside, and I feel kind of Alex Jones about all of this, but it's one of those Sherlock Holmes moments when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is the truth. The Secret Service was in on it. And they were like, Ixnay on Elling Tay, the Esident Prey. We're trying to save your life, too. Because he's going to get us all killed otherwise.
I can't poke any holes in this. This sounds really totally reasonable to me in an unreasonable time. You come up with something there that makes total sense to me. I'm afraid I hadn't thought it that far through. I was waking up every morning at that time, during that time, saying, "Is he dead yet?" But yeah, but you, I think you've covered it, man.
And see, I've even figured out the breathing difficulty, because Lee in New York says, "I recall his breathing difficulty on the Truman balcony. He had something." No, what he had was a snoot full of dexamethasone.
That could well be. That could well be.
And when they've got you, and Darlene in Connecticut asking the same thing, then what explains Trump gasping and gagging for air on the South Portico on his return from Walter Reed? There's an old bit that, again, a Robin Williams reference, Gone But Not Forgotten, where he talked, there's an old bit that he did where he talked about someone being on steroids and winds up, "Are you on steroids?" "No, no, 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 I'm not on steroids." But the way he was breathing that.
Yeah.
Steroids will do that shit to you, too.
That's right. That's right.
So
I was wondering about that. I really was.
Well, let me put you on the spot just for a second here. You've been kind enough to give us an hour, and I know Bucko in the chat room just said, "I so love Guy James. We found him right after Tom and Malloy. What a treasure." So you are not forgotten by any stretch of the imagination, and people listening to this program are like, "I love Guy." Let me ask you if perhaps you might be willing to join in on election night. Of course, I'll be on the air from 5 to 8 here. Same time frame. Maybe join in with a few observations, because I'm sure election day itself, even though it's been going on for a month now, I'm sure election day itself is going to be pure 200 proof madness.
Yeah.
You think you might like to join in and offer a few thoughts?
I sure would, Bob. I've enjoyed our talk here so much, and I would love it.
Well, I think that would be good fun. I'll look toward that. That has just made my election night all the more better. Well, you know, that's how they teach us in the English department at West Virginia University. More better.
More better.
But I'll look forward to that. And again, thank you so much for this evening. And as usual, going forward, stay safe, my friend. And it is always a joy to talk with you.
Same here, Bob. I look forward to election night. I, as they say, with bells on. So thank you, and I've enjoyed this hour so much.
It has been a blast.
Like old times.
Indeed. It's old home week. Guy James, take care, and I'll be talking to you in the intervening days. I'll give you a call a couple of days before election.
All right. Bye for now.
All right. Later. Bye now. And that was the one, the only, except no substitutes, Guy James. There is no one like him. I mean, don't you love his voice? He carries that voice around in a wheelbarrow. So that brings us to the top of the hour. And I have another thank you to send out to Steve and Miss Karen, Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. Thank you so much. That takes us down to 340 bucks to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Thank you. Thank you, Steve and Miss Karen, Little Cletus, Little Twiggy. And whatever we can do, whatever we can do to knock that down a little further will be much, much appreciated. I know it's a lot to ask, but it's also what we need to do to keep the program on the air going forward. Jude in the Great Northwest, Guy James, endearing and kind. And previously, Jude had pointed out when I was running the clip from Precious Princess Iwanka, My Daddy Trump Kushner, The Nag, and Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags. Jude said, "As my mother used to say when presented with an unnerving situation, I'd rather stick needles in my eyes. As a child, I couldn't quite figure out what she was really meaning, as she was gentle, a gentle and reflective woman. But having heard Iwanka and Sarah," Jude implies, "I understand oh so much better." Ron in Raleigh with a note. When he loses, when this orange tub of guts exits the White House and hopefully the political world, will Republican office seekers have him come and campaign for them? Asking for a friend that's had about enough of his fat ass, fat shaming intended. There are places where he will be a draw, and there are places where he will continue to be a net positive. You better believe it. Mississippi, Alabama, you know, the Confederacy. I mean, Hohenwald, Tennessee, where everybody's a Hensley. And the local doctor sleeps with his nurse, who's also his second cousin. Are you kidding? A Trump appearance in Hohenwald, Tennessee would be huge. Sure it would. No doubt about it. So this is Conversation Radio, as you just heard in the past hour of the conversation with Guy James. If you've got something you'd like to say, if you've got a, you know, bee under your bonnet, burr under your saddle. Well, Bob Kincaid Horn gets you in through Skype. 304-574-8178 gets you in the same way. And the Stress Line, named after the gone but not forgotten Bill Mr. Stress Miller. 844-843-4676 gets you into the program if you've got something that's on your mind. Me, I got a stack of stories that won't go, that just won't quit. And just because it becomes so easy to focus on the more outrageous moments from this gang of punks and thugs and foot pads and cut purses and highwaymen. Well, a little something. While we weren't watching, our friends, and they're a sister organization to Coal River Mountain Watch, our friends over at the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition noticed something. Over at the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, the Trump administration streamlines federal process for overseeing coal mine operations. Yeah. They're going to improve processing of 10-day notices for addressing mining complaints or potential violations. Deputy Secretary of the Interior Kate McGregor, Maggot, said, "It is indisputable that the administration was no friend to the coal miners across this great country who provide cheap baseload power, especially in states like West Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio. This rule restores SMACRA's mandate of cooperative federalism, reduces duplicative red tape, and ensures we work alongside our state partners who are the primary enforcement authorities under the law." Yeah. Funny the timing of that. October 27th. That's a desperate attempt to get the maggots excited about, well, he didn't do it in the first 4 years, but Donald Trump bring him back coal. And, of course, this is also designed because, remember, Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, this is designed to get a few more mountains blowing up a little bit quicker here in Appalachia, meaning that we'll have more West Virginians, men, women, children, elderly, poisoned and killed, because it never stops. It never ends. They're killers. They're poisoners. The new rule specifies that if a citizen alerts Office of Surface Mining of a potential violation, Office of Surface Mining will directly coordinate with SRAs. This direct coordination allows OSM to determine if the states have already investigated the potential violation, which promotes sharing of resources, saves time. So if you complain to the federal government about a mountaintop removal operation poisoning you or poisoning your community, or the blasting cracking your foundation or ruining your will, what'll happen is somebody at Osmary will call somebody in Charleston and say, hey, y'all ain't ready to investigate this. Oh, hell yeah. Okay, bye. And nothing, and I do mean nothing, will happen. And they'll just go on getting destroyed or poisoned or what have you. Don up in Prince George, British Columbia says, Trump, hopefully they'll have to get him out of jail to campaign anywhere after he's gone. From your mouth to God's ear, Don. And Larry in Liberalville says, if a Biden victory occurs and sticks, I think you'll hear about documents, files, and phone messages disappearing or being sent to the Trump Presidential Library. So there may be gargantuan legal motions pursued just to find out what went on. Then trying to fix what's been corrupted by Trump henchmen will be an incomprehensible task. But it's a task we can look forward to. Sorry for the split infinitive. Well, you don't have to apologize for that. I said more better. A pre-election topic, maybe for Thorn in the Side Thursday. What would happen in Michigan if a group of black men wearing BLM masks and carrying sidearms and rifles shows up at a polling site, just monitoring the proceedings, say? Will the police be called or will Second Amendment rights be upheld? Paranoid liberals want to know. Oh, Larry, you big kidder, I think you already know, don't you? An unpaid product non-placement. Read a story earlier today, and I've actually bought this stuff in the past and found it pretty tasty. You know, pimento cheese is a big deal. In the South. And there's a brand in South Carolina called Palmetto Cheese. And back in September, I guess I'm a little late to the game, but I'm an unforgiving sort, so fuck them. Costco, back in September, about the 24th of September, Costco pulled Palmetto Cheese off of their shelves after the founder of the Palmetto Cheese Company referred to Black Lives Matter as a terrorist organization. That's Brian Henry, the mayor of Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Couldn't resist and went on Facebook back in August and said, I'm sickened by the senseless killings in Georgetown. Two innocent people murdered, not two thugs or people wanted on multiple warrants. Two white people defenselessly gunned down by a black man. So why do we stand by and allow Black Lives Matter to lawlessly destroy great American cities and threaten their citizens on a daily basis? This BLM and Antifa movement must be treated like the terror organization they are. And then immediately, boycott Palmetto Cheese went semi-viral. And that caused Brian Henry to have to call a news conference, and he said, my comments were hurtful and insensitive. There's a concerted effort to boycott Palmetto Cheese. Please consider the hundreds of South Carolina jobs that depend on its success. We humbly ask for your support. Well, maybe you should have considered that before you told a great big honking lie, Brian Henry, about Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Because, well, the story is older, but it dovetails nicely, perfectly, in fact, with what we now know about what happened, for instance, in Minneapolis and we saw happen in other cities. That it was, in fact, Proud Boys and Boogaloo Boys and various and sundry other white supremacists. It was a white supremacist who started the fire at the auto parts place in Minneapolis. It was white supremacists who fired into and set fire to Precinct 3 in Minneapolis. You think Brian Henry would ever call a group of white supremacists terrorists? I don't think so. So even though you're not going to shame me into it, no. You know what Brian Henry could do? Brian Henry could step down as the head of Palmetto Cheese, sell his interest, get the hell far away from it, and then I might buy it again. But his apology is bullshit because he's a filthy, lying maggot. and it'll be a long damn time, otherwise known as never, that I'll buy Palmetto cheese again. Fuck him. Thanks for reminding me of the story, Larry, in Liberalville. Yeah. And Jude, by the way, is playing with her 2-year-old great-grandson as she listens to the program. Just as long as he doesn't repeat any of the ugly words that Uncle Bob uses, it might be necessary to remind him of that, Jude. Let's run over and check in with Steve in New York. Hey, Steve.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
Hey. Wanted to talk quickly. Did you talk in the beginning of the program tonight about why Trump was in Nebraska for the one electoral vote?
Well, because, I mean, I alluded to it, but why don't you flesh it out?
Well, I was listening to, I don't know, I was listening to something this morning where they actually, where one of the people, it probably was on Morning Joe, I don't really remember, where they actually said that if he wins, I think it was Florida, if he loses everywhere but the upper Midwest, except, but he wins Pennsylvania, he wins Florida, I think it was Florida, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and if he can pick off Nevada, that puts him, gives him 269 votes, that ties it. And then that one vote there in Nebraska would put him at 270. You know, that's the reason.
Yeah, but I saw that too and heard it, but it remains the mark of a desperate man, Steve, does it not?
Oh, I was just going to, Bob, I was just going to say, you know what? Put all the polls aside. Well, you know what? Let's talk about the polls right now, and people's, you know, they're comparing now to 2016, and I'm the last person to say that, you know, that we should get overconfident, that it's over. I would tell you, I would think, given everything that's right now, I would have no problem saying if it was over, if I could trust that Trump would allow the votes to be counted and not go to the fucking court. If that were the case, I could say I don't think he's got a realistic path to victory. That's the wild card for me, and particular, I have the opinion, I want to read it, the opinion that recently came out from the Supreme Court and Kavanaugh's concurrence.
Sloppy concurrence. Well, before you go there, Steve, let me point one thing out, because this may also be why he was in Omaha. Dave, number 11, sent this along just a matter of moments ago. 538 total electoral votes. That totals 269 plus 269. You know what happens if it's 269 plus 269?
Goes to the House.
And you know what happens when it goes to the House?
He's elected.
Yep.
Okay. That's a good point. But you know what? And I agree with – I don't think he or his campaign, I don't think they're smart enough to know that. I mean, Bob, these are the people that pissed away. How much money? Remember all we heard about $1 billion and the Death Star and all this, and that all got just that, you know, disappeared like a fart in the wind. And I have to say, the one thing I loved, he said, "Well, I'm gonna put any personal money I can into this to win." And I'm thinking, "Yeah, but you don't have any." But anyway, that's a whole other issue. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the polls between...
That's why I mentioned his prepaid MasterCards, just like his prepaid taxes.
Yes, yeah, prepaid taxes. Yeah, you know, anyway. You know, just when you think... Anyway, as we have said for the last 4 years, the weird just gets weirder, and it's about to go in warp speed on starting November 4th. But there's a there's a couple of very, very, very large differences between now and 2016. First of all, if you go back and you look at the polls, while in many instances Clinton's the margins that she was ahead are in many cases similar, 5 points, 6 points, 7 points, 4 points. The huge difference is, well, one of the huge differences is very few of those was her number over 50%. So you had a situation where she was ahead, like, you know, 48 to 42, for instance. Well, if you do the math there, that leaves 10 points that are undecided. And as an aside, let's put aside the Russian interference and, you know, whether or not they may have actually tampered with votes, which, you know, the only reason I would say probably not is because I don't have evidence that they did. But it wouldn't surprise me. But in any event, so that's the first thing, is that a number of these leads that Biden has, they're over 50%. Number one. Number two, going back to the undecideds, as I recall, generally speaking, a challenger, and let's be honest here, even though Hillary was not the sitting president, you know, she was like incumbent light because of who she was. And she ran as the incumbent, and he ran as the challenger. And in situations like that, I think historically that the undecideds break 4-1 for the challenger. That's generally speaking. So if she had a 10-point lead, 48-42, that means those 10 points would break his way 8-2, which would put him at 50 and her at 49 or around 50. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I want to take a moment here, Steve, mm-hmm. just to point out something that I find as someone who is interested in democracy. I know you're a monarchist, but
I'm a constitutional monarchist.
That's a monarchist with an adjective in front of it.
Okay.
But I'm into democracy. And I find it noxious, infuriating, probably no small degree racist, that we're talking about electoral college votes in 2020.
Oh, I think it's disgusting. It's disgusting. I mean,
you cannot lay claim to anything resembling democracy
if the majority doesn't elect.
If you're not talking about who wins the popular vote, you're not talking about democracy. And the funny thing is, even the framers knew this, Steve. Dr. Bill has talked about this on a number of occasions. James Madison himself said, "Listen, we will do what we're going to do. And whatever we do, we're going to call it democracy." They knew.
Right. I think I remember you saying this a couple weeks ago, where Madison kind of basically said later on, look, guys, this is not enough democracy. We're going to have to put a little more democracy in this.
Yeah, toward the end of his life, he was saying, no, we got to give more people the vote. I was talking with Boss Man Wayne earlier today and pointed out, and this is, you know, this is where you get into those troubling gray areas that, you know, that nuanced stuff that Guy and I were talking about last hour. There's no doubt that Andrew Jackson was a horrible human being. Slave owner.
And just
genocidal, just maniac.
Nasty.
Yeah, nasty person. But you know, what else he was?
Oh, he was a small D Democrat from what I remember in college.
Die hard. Probably, and he was the first president to say. And when you consider that the Electoral College is rooted, you know, with a taproot that runs 100 miles into the earth, opposed strongly to the Electoral College. And he was the first president to say, we got to get rid of it. And
was he from originally?
He was born in North Carolina.
Is that what was he before he was president? What was he in the, Congress or what was he?
He was a general and an English killer and an Indian killer.
Okay. Okay. But so he was not in public office before that?
Not that I can recall. I could be wrong.
Okay. So we would say that he was Andrew Jackson from the state of North Carolina. I'm trying to get the perspective there.
No. I mean, that's where he was born.
Okay.
But he was a Tennessean.
Gotcha. But nevertheless, he was a slave owner, and nevertheless, he was from a state which benefited from the Electoral College.
Oh, certainly, because Tennessee entered the Union as a slave state.
As a slave state. That's what makes this so dare I say on, you know, people called FDR a class traitor. Dare I say that advocating for the Electoral College against the Electoral College and being from a slave state, being a slave owner, puts him somewhat on par with FDR in that regard.
Morally, no, but philosophically, yes.
Right. Morally, no. Correct. Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Oh, but you didn't. You didn't. I was merely pointing out that, you know, and I was having a conversation with Boss Man Wayne today, and that very topic came up, and we have a habit as a country of ignoring problems until they are ignorable no longer, and then winding up dealing with a problem that is monumentally worse than it would have been had we dealt with it in the beginning. And some of these are historian parlor games. I get that, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the only way that Jefferson and Franklin and Adams could get the Southerners to sign on to the Declaration of Independence was if they took out the slavery language. Well, pick that little moment in history out and ask what happens if there's no Declaration of Independence. Game that out. The Constitutional Convention. Virtually every compromise inside the Constitutional Convention was done with an eye of getting the Southern slaveholding states to sign on and ratify. Well, what happens if that doesn't happen?
Is that rhetorical? Or are you asking?
No, it's not. It's not rhetorical at all. We go back to operating under the Articles of Confederation.
Which, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not so sure that wouldn't have been better. Do you remember?
Well, you have to understand why Madison and Hamilton et al. Ran their coup against the Articles of Confederation. In short, democracy was breaking out all over, and it was not going to be good for business. And there was money to be had. And that's why you get the Constitutional Convention.
Mm-hmm. And they looked out and saw that there's many more of us, you know, us proles than there are of them.
And there was a war debt. You have to understand that the Continental Congress issued bonds.
Bonds, right?
And there were veterans who held those bonds. And in the aftermath of the Constitutional Convention, the moneyed interest went out and bought all these poor veterans' bonds for literally pennies on the dollar. And that's the beginning of American wealth. That and slavery.
Real quick, as an aside, you remember I sent you a link to a book. It had something along the lines of, I don't remember the title, but the gist of it was how the framers stole democracy or something like that. And I sent it to you, and I remember you telling me, oh my God, I got to send this to Dr. Bill. I'm going to find that.
Yeah.
Because it's a big ass book. It's like probably 800 or 900 pages. And the scholar who wrote it is, I believe he's a professor at Harvard or somewhere like that. In any event. Oh, I just had a brain fart, but in a good way. I'm going to commend a book to you called "The 10 Restaurants That Saved Shaped America" or something like that.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
The guy who wrote it, he's a Yale professor named Dr. Paul. Is it Friedman or Freeman? Friedman. I know Paul. I met Paul at a 175th anniversary party of Delmonico's in Lower Manhattan a few years ago. He is like one of the night, but he's. You ever have these professors that it's? I feel like I could say anything to him or her, and they would know. That's what Paul's like. And the book is really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would commend that to you. But getting back to the polls and where we are, and look, I agree with you. I find it repugnant. You mentioned my monarchist leanings. It's one thing to be up front and say, yes, we are a constitutional monarchy. Everybody knows going in what that means. But what is a bit nefarious about what we've got, and frankly, going back to what Ben Franklin said to that person, a republic, if you can, it's not really a republic. It's definitely not a democracy. It certainly wasn't a democracy as it was originally conceived. So, you know, what I find repugnant is that just call it what it is then. Democracy light, I don't know. But anyway, so getting back to the issue with the polls, what seems to me is the margins are different. Because Biden is breaking 50% in a lot of these places. I think, you know, pollsters, you know, and frankly, here's the other little dirty secret about 2016 that people just, the people when they hear the press or people in the media say that they got it wrong, the polls got it wrong. In fact, the polls really didn't. If you went back and looked at the latest polls right up until Election Day, either the polls were right or almost right, or everything was within the margin of error. And that's something people – I know I keep going off on tangents here. But something people need to understand about polls is that those are number one, snapshots in time. Number two, they have a certain degree of confidence. And number three, they have margins of error. And a statistician would tell you straight up, you know, 51-43 with a 3% margin of error means that the 51 could be anywhere from 48-54, and the 43 could be 46-40.
Right. And here's where I always get a little bit lost, though. Mm-hmm. If you've got 51-43, mm-hmm. an 8-point margin, mm-hmm. and you've got a 3-point margin of error, mm-hmm. can it also be 48-46?
Yes.
So you can have the margin of error swing one way on one end and the other on the other.
Yeah. Yeah. The bottom line is all what a poll does, particularly for a political candidate, is it tells them and you never look at polls isolated. You look at polls over time to get trends. You know, I don't need to give example, but you look at trends. What's happening over time? Not only that, but you look at, are there any events in there that might explain why you have fluctuations in polling? You know, look at the polls before and after Comey did his mess. Hillary tanked right after that. The other thing, and no one seems to be saying this, I think people are a little bit embarrassed to say this, which is why they're not saying it, is Biden is not Hillary.
Nothing could have been brought more obviously home, and I don't want to piss anybody off. But, you know, today was the anniversary of the Comey letter.
Yeah, I heard that.
And so they ran the clip of her first public remarks about it.
Oh, that was on the Filthy Morning Habit, too,
yes,
I think.
Yes, it was. And I just kind of sat there looking at it in slack-jawed wonder, thinking about how, as a woman, she could not respond with the fury that a male candidate would and should have.
And yeah, right. Right.
Because there's Hillary saying, well, my, that certainly is odd, isn't it? And I'm not mocking her with my voice or anything like that.
Oh, I know you're not.
But if she had come out and said, I want James Comey to come here and say that to my face.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us would have been, yay, yes, do that.
Yeah.
But just as we spent 8 years talking about how Barack Obama couldn't let fly because then he would be an angry black man.
Oh, she's so shrill.
She's such a bitch.
Yep. You know damn well that when she got behind closed doors, she and Bill were screaming like, what in the fuck? How in the fuck can he do this?
Right. And what we were treated to today was a reminder that Comey's own wife was like, how can you do that? And Comey is, God knows, I hate to agree with Donald Trump, Comey's a flake.
Yeah, no disagreement here. I will only cut him a little slack in this regard, and I haven't done a whole lot of research into this, but I think, as I understand it, it wasn't simply him doing that. It was, there were some things here where apparently he had told the committee that he testified to, and they said to him or wrote him a letter saying, look, if something happens, we want you to tell us. And it was never intended what he did was never intended to be public.
No, but remember what all led up to that. And that's one thing. You know, by the way, I watched Borat 2 the other night. As Sparky said a couple of Fridays back, I took one for the team. The whole Comey thing sprang because of finagling that Rudy Giuliani did inside the FBI office in Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
And that he was fomenting some sort of a coup against Comey. And Comey was trying to protect his own ass in that regard. But you know, and again, there's no creativity there. Remember, this all had to do with a laptop. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And so, lo and behold, what do we have in 2020? Rudy Giuliani miraculously gets his hands on a laptop. One-trick pony. That's all. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, we got a note from Iowa Dan. You and Steve are talking about Trump visiting Omaha. I live on the Iowa side, about 20 minutes from the airport where the super spreader was held. I got news for Donnie. He doesn't stand a chance here. The Omaha district went to Obama two times, and Trump barely won last election. Nebraska's a red state, but this district is decidedly blue. There are many more Biden signs here, and the local news bashes Donnie on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. It didn't help that he left his loyal supporters out in the cold last night. Trump is getting all negative media here today. Bye-bye, Donnie.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I made a mistake. Ralph's serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Yes, in answer to your question, Andrew Jackson did serve in Congress.
Oh, okay. Was he from Tennessee or?
Yeah, at that point in time, yeah.
Okay.
And part of his hatred for the British, James in Illinois reminds us, Old Hickory, hardcore unionist, had a scar on his face given to him as a boy by a British officer during the Revolution. His White House was wide open to all comers on the occasion of his first inaugural. It was a fucking mess.
Yeah, he was breaking the plates and all that
shit. He was for the common man as long as he was a white American common man.
Right.
Yeah.
But look, you know, sometimes you have to take people in the time that they live. And the fact of the matter is this, is like you said, he was the first guy, the first anybody of any import to say, we need to get rid of the Electoral College. So, look.
I mean, but we got ripped off in 2000 by the Electoral College, and 19 years went by, and nobody introduced a constitutional amendment to ditch it.
You know why?
Chicken shits.
I think that's part of it.
It's also very hard to amend the Constitution. I get that.
That's part of it. But I think there was a sense of, I mean, look, Bob, that.
Oh, that'll never happen again.
That's part of it. But that scenario hadn't happened since, what was it, 18, was it the Rutherford B. Hayes election?
And Samuel Tilden.
Nothing. It hadn't happened since then. So I think there was a bit of shock there. Like, what the hell? But let's also, this wasn't just about, okay, and wait, let me just finish up what I was saying about the polls, and we'll get into this. So that's what I'm saying about the polls. But one other thing about this election that's different. First of all, I think their campaign has been, I think they have run a fantastic, and that's not, I don't normally say that about a Democrat, but I think they have run, well, and that's what happens when you have a woman at the helm, they have run a fantastic campaign. He learned from Hillary in terms of making sure he visited Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan. They're not going to forget that, you know, whereas you had the Hillary folks were all this super technical. It's like, you know what? Statistics and algorithms are great, but nothing beats retail politics. Nothing beats the candidate going into the state saying, I want your vote. Number one. Number two, putting all the polls aside, what really indicates where this stands is where the candidates are going and where they're spending time and where they're spending money. I don't know the last time I saw a Democratic candidate, president or vice president, going to Georgia or Texas at this stage. Look at the Trump's going to Arizona. He's going to Florida. I think he's actually going to Georgia this week too. They're spending time in places that a Republican candidate has no business going less than a week from an election. spending money in states they have no business spending money in a week before. I think those more than any poll are the real indicators, because that tells you what their internal polls are doing. That tells you what they're saying inside the campaign. Right now, Trump is only playing defense. That's all he's doing. He's not going anywhere that will expand the map. Although I saw him here last weekend, which I thought was really weird, but you know, who knows. So I look at that stuff, and you know, I am glad that I think Biden has they've learned from Clinton's campaign, and they're running through the tape. They're taking Robert Byrd's advice: run unopposed or run scared. And I don't know if you disagree or agree with me. I think they are, and they're really using their money advantage. And I don't like Mike Bloomberg, but hey, we will use him to get what we want. I don't like the Lincoln Project. I think they're a bunch of fucking conservative grifters trying to rehabilitate themselves, but we'll use it.
They want the work, but I trust that they are. I do trust that they are sincere when they say that they want this current crop of maggot scum out of office. So what I think what they're doing is trying to set themselves up for the people who want to be traditional Republicans and run against incumbents in, say, 22, because the Senate in 22 is going to be as bad for the Republicans as the Senate is this year. And the same with House races. Now that's where the Steve Schmitz and the rest of that gang are gonna make bank, mm-hmm. is by taking a few House races and flipping some House seats from Democrat to Republican in 22. Trying to take the House back and bend Biden to their will in an off-year election or a midterm election.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see.
I mean, that makes more sense to me than anything else. I don't know. Right. Hell, maybe there are Democratic Senate candidates and House candidates who are going to want to go out and hire Steve Schmidt.
I mean, you know what, Bob, and we've said this a million times on the program. Whatever you think about those people, they know what they're doing. And not only do they know what they're doing, they do it extremely well. I mean, and they turn shit around like that. I mean, we'll see a clip, you'll see a Trump clip, and then all of a sudden I look online and there's a YouTube video. And nothing is shoddy.
Oh, no, it's pro. I mean, that one yesterday with the little 60-second movie that was the election results of 2024.
I couldn't find that.
Holy cow! That was I mean, that was chilling, like a Twilight Zone episode is chilling, with the snapper at the end.
I mean, and I have to be honest with you. That must have completely surprised you when you saw it. You're like, oh, what the hell?
Well, no, I'm riding along, she's about to. I figured that she was about to tell little Johnny that Trump had won, but I was assuming that it was next Tuesday. It was 4 years from next Tuesday.
Yeah,
that blew me back in my chair like the guy in the old Maxell ad.
Mm-hmm. And I thought I heard the people chanting 12 more years.
No, they were hollering 4 more years.
Okay. No, but I, like you said, I went, oh. And you know what's so crazy, Bob? There was a time when that ad would have been seen as nothing more than a parody, as, oh, isn't that funny? Ha, 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 you're being stupid. That's probably what's the most shocking thing, is that anybody who has half a brain saw that and heard that.
We have a court now that could make that a reality.
Yeah.
I mean, what if? I realize that, you know, with you as a lawyer and everything, this is probably going to make you bark. But what if a two-term president were to go in and say that the 22nd Amendment constituted an unjust taking of property without due process of law? Now, don't tell me that I'm nuts or that that's a terrible idea or a wild, crazy theory. Just think about that claim within the context of a court comprised of a bunch of wild-eyed radical Roman Catholics in its two-vote majority.
Probably all pro-Lochner.
Yeah.
Wait.
I mean, just work with me here. I mean, we're engaging in some little intellectual fun. The framers would have been horrified by the 22nd Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
If the framers had wanted to limit the right of the president to seek the presidency, they, by God, would have. They probably even debated it during the convention. And so, as an originalist, the 22nd Amendment cannot be tolerated.
The amendment which the Republicans pushed.
Yes. Yes.
Man, we are living in fucking weird times.
Clearly, those Republicans of 1951... didn't understand the original intent of the framers, which must, by law, by tradition, by consequence, control all the rulings of the Supreme Court. So the 22nd Amendment's got to go.
You know.
Oh, and then the fun starts with the 19th.
Uh huh.
And we don't have slavery anymore, so we don't need the 13th per se. It's an anachronism. I know. I sound crazy and paranoid. I sound like a lefty Alex Jones, except there's no monkey jellyfish hybrid involved.
And if the last 4 years has taught us anything, I mean, how many times have we heard they can't do that?
Yeah, not from me, you haven't.
But I mean, you know what I'm saying, though, is how many times have we seen things that. I don't know.
There is no such thing with this Supreme Court as they can't do that. I mean,
well, that's because
Brett Kavanaugh wrote that sloppy ass concurring opinion the other day in the Wisconsin case, declaring that something that hadn't happened had, or that something that had happened hadn't happened, specifically Vermont.
Right.
I mean, that shit would have gotten you a D tops in first year legal writing.
Right.
I mean, that's a complete research fail. And one of the things that I found so interesting in all of that is that we had all of that high-toned horse shit from the Tiger Mom about how she groomed only the best and brightest to be law clerks for Brat. Somebody wrote that shitty ass concurrence and completely blew past the Vermont issue.
I'll have to go back and look. I have to go read it. I haven't read it. The other thing too.
Well, I was just going to point out that James in Illinois says the 22nd Amendment. It's in the Constitution. How can it be unconstitutional? It can be amended, but isn't that it? James, I'm not. Again, I know it's Alex Jonesy. But we're in an Alex Jonesy world with an Alex Jonesy right. court. Right. It can be anything. They can say that the original intent of the framers was that if there was a term limit on presidents, it would only apply to Democrats. and they've got the votes to make it stick.
It reminds me of the scene in Animal, if you remember, an Animal Farm, where at night they're all sleeping one night, and one of the animals had climbed up on a ladder and changed the rules, and the person fell, and the animal fell off the ladder, and they made the remark that they weren't, they said that the rules looked the same, but something looked different. And I think that's where they changed the all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Yeah. I thought it was all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
I don't remember.
Because wasn't that the conflict between Snowball and, because the whole thing was an analogy for, or a metaphor for Stalin and Trotsky, wasn't it?
It's been so long since I've read it. I remember little bits and pieces of it.
And I got to share something with you coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Per Andrew Weissman, we were going back to us talking about Comey and Comey being a bit of a flake. In his book, Where the Law Ends, the FBI rules book had clear steps for a situation like what Comey encountered. All he had to do was follow the rules that are set up for these kinds of situations. Bottom line, you don't do what Comey did just before an election. Weissman even received a call from an FBI agent who was falling to pieces because he said it would take the FBI decades to regain its credibility after what Comey had done. Furthermore, Comey left out of his letter to the 8 Republican committee heads that the FBI investigators had told him that it was highly unlikely that they'd find anything new or incriminating against Hillary in any of the newly discovered emails. Comey left that out of the letter, a letter that Weissman said was sure to have been leaked, basically implying that Comey knew that. And don't forget, everyone Comey shat on had one thing in common. Hillary Clinton, Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates. Follow me? And two of them were in authority positions over Comey. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Got,
So, it's real. And Comey, the further, you know, the longer the view of history gets, it be, for instance, just from classical history. In the immediate aftermath of the Catiline conspiracy, there were a lot of people who thought that Cicero had overstepped his bounds, but there were enough people hollering, "No, no, no! He saved the Republic." That Cicero was okay for the time being. But in fairly short order, that began to change, and now there's, you know, with 2,040-some years of history behind us, there seems to be consensus that Cicero was really trying to burnish his own image and blow smoke up the Senate's ass and try to get them nice and terrified so they'd, you know, like him. Because Cicero had a hang-up from being a country boy. Well, the further we get, history-wise, the further we get from 2016, the more I think we're going to find out that among the list of chief villains in it all, yeah, there's the Russians. Yeah, there's Jill Stein. But way at the top of the list of villains is going to be James Comey.
I agree.
And Bill in PA. Bill in PA said, "Hey, I found the 2024 commercial, that Lincoln Project 2024 commercial on YouTube." Bill says it's scarier than you said.
2024. That's what I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
One last. Little tidbit. The Nebraska Wisconsin game. I think there will be political implications there. What do you? I don't think that's any revelation. Of course, there will be. Do you think that, to the extent that anyone benefits from that, Trump will, or Biden will?
The only way you can break that out is to know what the ratio of intelligent, sane people who don't want to die of COVID is versus the COVIDiots and mask holes. If there are more mask holes and COVIDiots in Nebraska and Wisconsin, it will break for Trump because they'll be.
See, I told them they had to play football. I saved football, but that you know they're not going to because they're Democrats and they hate me. They hate Trump. They hate my trade deal. You know the drill.
The China virus. Look what the China virus did.
And I have a new word for you. I wanted to make sure that I brought this up tonight. I didn't start out doing this, but it's the way that internet rabbit holes work. There is a word out there among people who talk about COVID-19, and these are people who think that, you know, it's just gonna
go away,
and they think they're clever doing this. They think that the word they use to describe people like us who pay attention to the science and the data and know what's going on and acknowledge the danger of the virus, we are referred to as doomers. Rhymes with boomers. Doomers. And I saw some discussion threads that just made my blood run cold, because it's all overblown, it's all made up, and I've been hearing this for a while, but I've never seen that word doomer. But I saw an analogy. A guy leaves for work 5 minutes later than he ordinarily does, and because of traffic, he has to take a different route. And taking that different route, he winds up in a car wreck that kills the other driver because the route he had to take because there was an ambulance that was stopping traffic because it was on the way to the hospital because somebody had COVID-19.
Well, see, the guy that died in that car wreck, he'll be listed as a COVID-19 death because of the doomers.
What?
It's the Peking butterfly effect gone horribly, horribly wrong. They're out there.
I don't even. We are. I don't know that we're ever going to reconcile as a people.
I don't know that we ever have. Fair I mean, enough. we're acting like this is sui generis. It's not. From almost the very beginning, there is a long history of electoral violence that extends to the very founding of the country. Violence against immigrants trying to vote. Violence, real violence against women trying to vote. They were literally chained to the bars of their cells in Washington, D.C. And God knows the violence that attended the civil rights movement. And that's just electoral, trying to exercise the franchise violence. All the political violence, what did Mao say? War is politics by other means? Or did he say politics or politics flows from the muzzle of a gun?
I don't know.
Well, in too many instances in this country, that has proven true. The Civil War is electoral violence. Understand. Since we were talking about Andrew Jackson, Andrew Jackson's threat to John C. Calhoun that if there, and this is way before the Civil War, this is the late 1820s, that he would get on his horse and ride to South Carolina and start hanging secessionists, and he would stop hanging secessionists when there were no more secessionists to hang, put that issue to bed for another 25 years or so. And bear in mind, that was said after a falling out with his own vice president, John C. Calhoun. So, again, nothing new. Going all the way back to clip from Ivanka, Ivanka said something, it just kind of blew past me, but Jude heard it with a different set of ears, and she said, "My God, they really do whatever they want." She visited him in the hospital, and she said that.
Did she say that?
Yeah. And I visited him in the hospital, and he was feeling great, and Jude said, "My God, they really do whatever they want." As a former nurse, I can't remove from my conscious being of all the thousands of medical professionals who are struggling and caring for the mass numbers with COVID, along with so many of their fellow professional friends who are dead. And Ivanka talks as if it was just a fun walk in the park, visiting with Daddy in the hospital. Jude said, "I'm shaking my head in disgust. Take care and love to all." Yeah, think of the Americans. God, she's awful. She truly is feckless. Think of that, like Darlene said, feckless. Think of all the Americans who have died alone. In some cases, if it matters to them, unshriven. Feeling unloved. Maybe with a cell phone held up to their face as they breathe their last on a ventilator. But Ivanka got to go see Daddy in the hospital. I add that to my list of evidence that he never fucking had it. They told him he did.
I was just going to say that.
Wow. It's been a hell of a night. And we never got to any religion stories. Damn it.
Did you see the one that I sent you about the pastor who peed on the lady in the airplane?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a beauty.
Did you also see, I sent you about, and maybe you mentioned this, that the guy who wrote the anonymous editorial.
Yeah. He came out today.
Mm-hmm.
And he was that former chief of staff to Kirstjen Nielsen when she was head of DHHR. And he's being referred to as a nobody, a low-level employee with an axe to grind. Didn't have any access to. But more interesting was the story that came out. Darlene made me aware of this. Trump says he was worried that it was either Jared or Mike Lee.
Jared. That fucker's too goddamn dumb to put three words together.
Yeah, but it says something about the amount of paranoia, even inside his most innermost circle, which kind of goes back to some tweets that I used to send him every now and then. Donnie, you can't trust anybody. None of them. Not your family. Not your son-in-law. Because they all learn from you, Donnie. They will sell you out in a heartbeat because they know you will sell them out.
Grifter's going to grift.
I think I said, Donnie, if I were you, I'd just quit. Get Pence to pardon you and quit. And it would have been the smart move.
Oh! One last thing I want to ask you. I was thinking about this. I've heard people say two things. If he loses, he's either going to try to pardon himself, or he's going to resign and get Pence to pardon him. What about this weird scenario? He signs a letter. You know, I can't be the president right now for a while. Pence becomes acting president. Pence pardons him as acting president. Donnie takes power again. Can the acting president pardon somebody?
The 25th Amendment says, and he will serve as acting president. But you'd have to get, that would be an interesting, oh, wow, that's a fun little chess move on the chessboard. It would have to start, and there would be howls of outrage. It would have to start with Mike Pence initiating the Section 4 process. And so,
unless Trump voluntarily says,
if he loses, he's still not president anymore on January 20th. That doesn't give him a new term.
Well, I understand, but he would be president on. From all that time until then, he could suddenly need some sort of operation the day after the election, and he has to sign that letter saying Pence is in charge until he comes out of anesthesia. And during that 3-day period, acting president, Mike Jesus's brother Pence pardons him. He comes out of anesthesia.
It's not impossible. Nothing is impossible. Now, there is the theory that the pardon power cannot be used for corrupt purposes.
Great.
But
Court will do about that?
Well, I was going to say that really that's only a theory because it didn't work worth a tinker's damn on Nixon because he was as guilty as the day was long. But you'll notice nobody ever hailed him in front of a court. He never stood in shackles. That miserable bastard lived into his mid-90s and was treated like an elder statesman, and Bill Clinton eulogized him like his daddy. Yeah. Arthur, by the way, says, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about, Bob? I had the best COVID. It was a beautiful COVID. You wouldn't believe how good my COVID was. COVID, COVID, COVID. That's all they talk about. It's a Democratic media hoax.
I mean, does he even know about Marsha, Marsha, Marsha? You know, Jan Brady?
He is such a nasty...
And I God, mean, he is. He's the ultimate Jan Brady. He even falls in that realm in his natural, unnatural family. Because Fred Jr. was the Marsha. And his little brother, who now is dead, was the Bobby. Oh, we figure out so much on this program, Steve. We figure out so much.
Oh, he's done. Last thing, I can't get over that Ivanka tonight. I cannot get over how I almost don't think that they were being sincere. I think that they were mocking the people they were standing in front of. They don't give a shit about these people, Bob. They don't care.
It's who they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Breathtaking, isn't it?
Not anymore.
Nothing surprises. Not anymore. Nothing surprises.
No, doesn't. It doesn't. And we'll get yourself out of there.
Yeah. Well, we will. We'll wrap up the program. Jude says, "Keep doing your deep breathing, Steve." Jude knows of which she speaks.
I do that too much, by the way, because I hear it if I sometimes.
No. Jude is a very special spirit, and when she tells you to keep doing your deep breathing, don't worry about what it sounds like on air. Keep doing your deep breathing. But we'll wrap up the program and by the way, Jeremy jumped back in right after Stephen, Miss Karen, Little Cletus, and Little Twiggy did. We'll wrap up the program at 3:35 to go, so that makes us at 6:35 tomorrow, and we'll see if this whole increased fundraising goal thing will work. I mentioned that with you on the line because you were the one who broached the topic, and... We'll We'll see. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
And thanks to everybody. Yeah. And if anybody had trouble kicking in last night, there was a glitch at PayPal that screwed with the interface. And that's all better now, according to Brother Deacon Asa. So that's at least taken care of. So again, thanks to Kyle and Jeremy and Steve and Jeremy. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to step off, okay? Because I know you got to get going.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap things up here, Steve. You take care. Go enjoy.
Go
and enjoy something New York-y now that the program's over.
The subway on my way home. That's as New York-y as I want to get tonight.
I understand. Take care, Steve. Later.
Take care, man. Bye. Bye-bye.
And that's the end of the program for the evening. There's a new word. Brother Deacon Asa tells me we're also referred to, besides doomers, we're also referred to as masketeers. I don't think that's quite as icky as doomers, but yeah. So, thanks everybody. Thanks to Guy James for giving us an hour this evening. He'll be on for election evening coverage, and I think that should be fantastic. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind subscriptions via PayPal and Patreon. Thank you to all of you who contribute a la carte to keep the program going. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Pinch Hit Midweek Chat Room Utility Moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Remember, new Malloy on the way, headon.live, 9 o'clock, best place to listen to the Malloy program. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. It is not safe out there. It is getting less safe out there. So if you can stay home, please stay home. If you have to be out, please wear your mask. Please wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your gloves. Carry hand sanitizer with you everywhere you go. Maintain your social distance, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. Make it 15, 20 feet if you humanly possibly can. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, I just love it when Donald Trump dances the YMCA. Well, avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.